Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Philbrook Museum of Art opens a new exhibit Sunday that examines American artists' view of American industrialization in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. That view both celebrates America's growing industrial prowess, but also warns of its effects on working people, the marginalized, and the land. These artists are also reflecting an ongoing search for a truly American vision of art at the same time. Making Modern America features over 80 paintings, photographs, design objects, prints, and even film, with works from well-known artists like George Bellows, Charles Sheeler, Thomas Hart Benton, and Joseph Stella, as well as major works from far lesser-known artists depicting the growth of the American metropolis, industrialization, labor, and environmental impacts. Locally owned artworks like Alexander Hoag's Mother Earth Laid Bare or Leon Kroll's Lower New York hang alongside lended works from the Smithsonian and art institutions across America. The exhibit is organized by Philbrook, and the curator, Catherine Whitney, Philbrook's chief curator and creator of American art, is my guest today. Making Modern America opens Sunday and runs through May 26th at Philbrook Museum of Art. Catherine Whitney, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And congratulations on this new exhibit. What was the story you were trying to tell with Making Modern America?
This was basically the story of America between the wars from 1910 to about 1960, so beyond World War II. And I wanted to look at social and environmental changes in America through the eyes of artists, particularly artists who were either glorifying or questioning industry, progress, growth in America, which was sort of the big banner of almost nationalistic speak in the 20s, growth and progress and energy. It's our strength. It's our promise. But then after the Great Depression, things started to change a little bit. And then a lot of socially conscious artists from the 30s to the 50s really started delving that and looking at this almost kind of naive earlier rush to progress and questioning, is it all positive?
It's almost like what happened in Europe in the 19th century as the Industrial Revolution right. happens. You have the same sort of issues there where artists sort of celebrate the great new vistas, say, in Paris on the grand boulevards that, they just totally tore out old neighborhoods and built these grand boulevards, of course, that we love today in Paris. And then later there's this, oh, here's what we lost.
Right.
And so is there a similar current?
Yeah,
here?
It's sort of the let's improve upon nature. Let's control nature. Let's make life a little easier and more efficient. Let's eliminate hardship. But when you do that, things get out of balance. So while it's a historic show, there are a lot of the same issues that we're dealing with still today that come up. So I thought it was a really relevant thing to explore.
Some of the works of art require sort of a different mindset. I'm thinking of Charles Sheeler's work, Stacks in Celebration. Mm-hmm. You look at it today and you go, why would somebody decide to paint these smokestacks, even though he does it in very modernist tones and it's a very interesting composition to it? Why would you take time to paint these smokestacks? Or why would you want to look at the inner workings of a factory with the cogs and all this sort of almost minutia view of a factory floor? What was going through their minds?
So a lot of these artists were fine artists, and some of them also were commercial artists. They had to make bread and butter sometimes. They couldn't always
sell.
Sometimes
they did both.
Yes. And so Sheeler in particular was both a painter and a photographer, and he was commissioned to photograph a Ford Motor Company plant outside of Detroit. And he informed his painting through his photography. So he had this photographer's lens, and he really looked at sort of the beauty of what was considered the machine age during this time, contemporaneous with Art Deco era. And there was a real need, I think, after World War I to control and organize everything and to kind of take the best engineering minds and out of the chaos of World War I instill control. So there was this tendency in art for a realism and this kind of mechanized modernity that was very beautiful and very efficient. So there was this trend in art and design and in building booms in large cities for this. So he was sort of reiterating this aesthetic. He also was a photographer for Vanity Fair. So there was this kind of high-end cultured class that he was looking at, as well as this kind of commercial look. And this is actually a later piece that we have in the show on loan from the Detroit Art Institute. And it's a beautiful, very diaphanous view of smokestacks, like you say, but they're almost like totem poles, and they also evoke this kind of cathedral-like beauty with stained glass. So while it's, quote, realism, it's through a modern lens with photography-infused perspectives, and it's glowing and beautiful, and it almost posits the American landscape or the American industrial landscape as sort of the new Eden or the new kind of American cathedral, if you will.
Yeah. Now, one thing that's important to keep in mind about this era of American art, there was two schools, I guess you could say. One was looking at what was happening in Europe, where the style of art was changing about every year and a half
right.
during this period, and they were searching for a new art. And American artists were reacting to that and trying to adapt it mm-hmm. to American art. And there was this second school, which I think really most of the art that you are featuring in this exhibit is. They were looking for a completely American expression of modernism. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, again, celebrating industrial might, America's growing prowess as a world player and an industrial country
exactly.
that was leading. What was going through artists' mind in trying to find this American art?
I think the industrial subject matter, as you said, was very much, you know, let's paint America's granaries and America's highways and America's engineering feats and the bridges and the skyscrapers that were kind of these emblems of modernity in New York City. So by looking at that subject matter, that was a way to distinguish their modern painting and styles from the Europeans.
We're
they
young,
said,
they're
yeah,
old.
We have this Cubist style. Yeah, it looks kind of like your Parisian Cubism, but this is very clearly American subject matter. And so it was kind of a mixture of, we can say it's American because of the subject, and it's the American landscape, and it's American growth.
Yeah. So in this exhibit, you have four major sections. What mm-hmm. were the stories you wanted to tell? Because it's a kind of a big story that you're trying to tell.
There's a lot going on. But, you know, it was half a century of art and development in the United States, so it's hard to do in 5,000 square feet. So, yes, there are four sections. The first is called The Mighty Metropolis. And that basically looks at the celebration of progress and energy and power and the modern city. Tulsa also came up at the same time that a lot of, you know, New York City during the Jazz Age. And so I wanted to kind of make that connection with what was going on nationally was also happening in our own town. And so there are some photos of the Phil Tower being built, and we have some wonderful loans of industrial design objects from the Tulsa Historic Society and a really wonderful Leon Kroll loan mm-hmm. from the library that's a very high museum quality piece that's here in town. So I really wanted to show the speed and the energy and the bustle and the excitement of modernity and the modern age and the machine age through these kind of urban views. The show also tries to show within each section that not everything is bright and shiny and new and positive. When you have, like we talked about before, a change in one direction, it's going to affect something else. So there are a couple scenes that look at the cram of sort of the rat race or stressful commutes in subways. And, you know, while you have mass transit, is that wonderful that humanly difficult and socially trying? Things like gentrification, eviction.
This was a new artist to me, Elzier Couture. Is that right?
Couture.
Mm-hmm. Couture. Mm-hmm. And this really evocative piece called The Eviction. I've never heard of this artist, but it's a beautiful piece.
It's a powerful piece.
Powerful
it's
piece.
Very bright, and it shows a woman of color in the center of the composition carrying a potted plant, carrying her luggage, and around her is this very kind of menacing but bright and cheery architectural landscape with these very jagged edges and a sign that's flashing rooms. And so you see her as leaving, very proud, but carrying her possessions with her in this kind of menacing sign, and it's called The Eviction. And the artist was from Chicago and really used women kind of symbolically, usually in architectural settings, to kind of make these social statements about difficulty in urban settings, and particularly in the African-American populations.
The second section of the show really is, again, this idea of celebrating Americans' growing industrial might. Again, a lot of it is commercially inspired. Like right. there's some Thomas Hart Benton's and some other artists that were actually doing work on commission for companies, mm-hmm. You know, showing off the oil patch, showing off the industrial plant. And so what is the other side of that?
So, as you said, there are a lot of these emblems of industry and of power, sometimes in very regional views, sometimes in very modern geometric views. The other side of that, it doesn't show up yet till the next section, but No, there is another side. There's a very complicated piece that's sort of the key piece of that section of industrial power by Rockwell Kent. And Kent was a complicated, very popular, beloved painter and illustrator of the realist vein at this time. And he was commissioned by Betinamus Cole, which was basically the PR arm of the National Coal Association, which lobbied in Washington for coal owners and operators. And they commissioned Rockwell Kent to do this 12 series painting series showing the kind of overwhelming power and positivity of coal on society. So you have this kind of golden genie emerging from the clouds, holding this electrified coal chunk over this factory slash train.
Yes.
With these tiny little ant-like figures in this desert-like environment. And it's very biblical. It's very allegorical. It was based on many, many powerful figures from Prometheus to Michelangelo to Mercury, and was even modeled after some of the Notre Dame football players because they were very popular in the 40s. But it was during this very vulnerable post-World War II era.
But what's really interesting about it, the longer you look at it, the more it becomes a little more ambivalent about this idea. Because if you know his history, you know, he started out doing these very natural landscapes. He was among the first Western artists to paint places like Greenland and Alaska. That's probably some of his best known views. But he also became an incredible radical leftist, communist, really.
Yep.
And
illustrator for Moby Dick.
Yes,
right,
illustrator. Right. So there's all these ambiguous messages in this, what seems to be a very powerful message of coal, energy, good America. Can you take us into some of those ambiguities?
Yeah, he later all but denied that he did this series, which is kind of complicated in and of itself. But he said, oh, you know, we have to do what we have to do in difficult times. So this was definitely a commission. But there's funny correspondence back and forth with the company who is commissioning him, kind of telling him what to do. And he's like, I'm not going to do that. You know, like they were saying, well, in one of these, the godlike figure, you know, looks a little like, quote unquote, pansy. And he went crazy. He was like, I will paint this person how I want, and I don't appreciate your boys calling, you know, my, and it was, he was just really like, uh-uh. So he said, do you want me to finish this or not? So as I said, he was a complicated individual, and this was a commission, and he later had a lot of very kind of socialist and communist beliefs later. And
In this third section that you were talking about, you are starting to see the working man emerge as a hero, as somebody that people in New York or in the galleries on Fifth Avenue or in the places where art was shown and sold and bought could see these people for who they are and their essential humanity.
Right.
And there are some number, you know, there's some great examples in American art history. And there are a few in this show as well, some in the show.
Right. Yeah, I think this was a very popular trope, if you will, during the 20s and 30s.
Especially in the 30s.
Yes. Yeah. Of presenting labor and its importance, and as you said, the common man. And often early on, it was masculine, it was virile. Half the time, their shirts were off and their muscles were bulging. And they were shown as these very essential components of the larger industrial machine. Like, we had these factories and we had these gears, but they weren't, you know, they wanted to make sure that people didn't feel replaced, that they were essential. Then you have the Depression, and then you have people being laid off or underemployed.
Or exploited.
Yes. So I say in the exhibition that the face of labor essentially changed, and you have these very tender photographs and WPA prints showing different communities and different emotions and different social situations that are very poignant and both heroic and sad, and women and people of color, and it's not just these kind of godlike figures. The centerpiece in that gallery is a quite early piece by George Bellows that's an exciting piece to have in Tulsa. We have it on loan from the Columbus Museum of Art, and George Bellows was a prominent urban realist painter, and this is from about 1911, and it shows, it's called Snow Dumpers, And it shows laborers and horses basically hauling shoveled snow from the streets of Manhattan and dumping them into the East River. But you have these chugging tugboats and these warehouses and stacked buildings and the kind of gritty New York City scene and steaming factories, but also melting snow. And it's very virile, but also integrated, that, you know, the laborers and the beasts and the elements of modern industry were all sort of working together for the good of America. But that was sort of a really early New York scene.
My guest today is Catherine Whitney, a chief curator and a curator of American art at Philbrook Museum. Philbrook opens a new exhibit, Making Modern America, which opens Sunday at Philbrook and runs through May 26th. She's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, one of the really remarkable things you've done in assembling this show is you found new ways to view some Tulsa-held art. I think when you see that George Bellows painting, and in the next room you see the Kroll painting, Leon Kroll's Lower New York, The Bridge, mm-hmm. you have these connections between these artworks. When you see the photography of something you hold, like the Philbrook construction, and another piece you now own, the Lucia Nelson Chrysler Building.
Right.
You see these connections.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. So tell us about finding those connections.
Well, the Leon Kroll, as you said, is a really important painting that's held by the City County Libraries, given by the Aronsons in the 1970s. And when I first saw that painting, when I first moved to Tulsa, I saw it at the library and I thought, oh, there's a really large, well-done reproduction poster of a George Bellows painting behind plexiglass. And I went up and I said, oh my gosh, this is a painting. And it's Leon Kroll, who was a colleague of George Bellows. And you're right, it shows laborers under this shadowy arching Brooklyn Bridge, and it's called Lower Manhattan. Are they talking about the geographical location in New York? Are they talking about the class of man working, you know, these laborers toiling in the shadows? And that really related very well to the Snow Dumpers piece that was sort of across the country. So I wanted to have a little dialogue going there. It was an opportunity. A lot of this show was inspired by the Standard Oil Company collection at Philbrook that we received in the 50s, that Standard Oil commissioned a lot of these regional artists and realists to depict the oil industry's contributions to World War II. And we had had some shows earlier on in the 60s and 70s saying that, but it was all sort of rah, rah, look at this. But there are some complicated images in there, and some of them are a little ominous, and some of them are wonderful and futuristic, but some of them are a little dark, too. So I kind of wanted to tease out a little bit of the, as you said, the kind of complicated.
I'm forgetting the artist now, but there's a primitive American piece that shows a blacksmith shop switched into a gas station.
Oh, yes, Doris Lee.
Yeah,
and
right.
Interestingly, Doris Lee was married to Russell Lee, the photographer.
And you have, of course,
about
a number of images yeah. there. And we were talking before about how Russell Lee and many of the photographers that were sent out across the country during the Depression for, like, the Farm Security Administration and some of these alphabet soups of the New Deal right. to document the recovery, I think, is really what they were sent to do. And really what they showed was this huge divide between what government was saying and the reality for people just beyond the razor's edge, and some really subversive work in a way
yeah.
in documenting the tremendous risk people were at and just on knife's edge.
Yeah.
And a lot of those photographs from Russell Lee are documenting places right near here,
yeah.
Oklahoma.
And basically looking at rural poverty across the United yeah. States. And you're right, it's most of those works are from 39 and 40 and take place in Oklahoma and talk about people that, I mean, the Okies who had to leave to go to California.
In a time when we thought the Depression was almost
right,
over.
Right.
And it's showing that no.
That was 39 and 40, and it definitely wasn't here.
yeah. And of course, one of the Philbrook masterpieces, Mother Earth Laid Bare. You, again, a new context for seeing this in terms with Russell Lee's photography film that's also part of this exhibit, too. There's a earlier, when you're looking at all the gears of the factory, you have a clip from Modern Times by Charlie Chaplin.
Yep.
And then a longer clip from The Plow That Broke the Plains, which right. was a seminal documentary film in the late 30s documenting the Dust Bowl.
Right. I thought that was a nice way to bring the Russell Lee photographs to life, because you see some of these similar, you know, women and children and farmers brought to life in film. And it also, I think, tells the story of the Alexander Hoag Mother Earth Laid Bare, which basically is a, I think a lot of people know that piece, but it's this beautiful image of the devastated soil outside of Dallas and how it was basically stripped bare, literally, by the plow and unregulated agricultural practices that were in such a rush during the wheat boom and then later just stripped the topsoil that kept the soil in place. So then when we had a drought and then when we had the vicious winds around the Dust Bowl, everything blew away, including people's livelihoods and well-being and farms. And so it's a very, very poignant, beautiful piece that sort of ends the exhibition. But that really, I think, captures the last section of the show, which is called The Paradox of Progress, which really looks at the social and environmental consequences and some of the unseen communities or marginalized communities that may not benefit equally from progress.
There's another piece right near it which shows a small family group together. I can't remember. Is it called The Outcast, I believe?
The Exodus.
Exodus. Mm-hmm. And again, this is another aspect of the story.
Right. I like that piece. It's from the Museum of Fine Arts Houston. I saw it years and years ago, and I've never been able to forget it. And it's very ambiguous. It's not even clear if it's in America or Europe, because he traveled a lot, even though he was an American. And it shows this group of people basically leaving what looks like a ruined landscape and kind of crumbling complex of buildings in the back, and you have dogs and trash in the foreground. It kind of evokes Moses leading his people, but they're in contemporary dress. And so I think it's really a larger statement about refugees, essentially. Immigrants, people having environmental ruin. Something happened. Was it economic? They couldn't afford to live there. Can they not afford to grow their crops? What was going on? But in its ambiguity, it's very powerful.
And that's by Robert Spencer.
Yeah.
And that's the other nice thing about this show is you're learning all sorts of these artists. One in the earlier part of the show, you were talking about subway traffic, and there's an incredibly large canvas. I believe it comes from the Smithsonian by Lily Ferrati.
Right.
And I've never heard of this artist, and I don't think you have either.
I hadn't.
It is an amazing example. Yeah. It's a masterpiece,
yeah.
Really.
This was probably her masterpiece. She was Hungarian-born American, and she worked for the WPA. And this is kind of like the masterpiece of mass transit. But it's a beautiful, colorful, energetic painting that shows all sorts of people, ages, backgrounds, riding the subway and sort of how people are crammed together in this environment that does not necessarily support a social experience. And in fact, it leads to isolationism. And so you have these very individual people. One woman's applying lipstick, one guy's looking over another. A woman's looking over a guy's shoulders, reading a newspaper. You have a musician, street musician, falling asleep. And they're generally very isolated individuals, although there are some Gabby women in the front. But it's a really animated but compelling painting that by an unknown, and it's fabulous.
It really is. And you know, you're talking, the subway was a popular subject. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because of that, because everybody's in their own world.
Right.
And I think artists are drawn to that, I suppose.
Right. We have some fabulous prints, too, showing kind of the rush and bustle of the commute in the evening and at night. And
Benton Spruance.
Yes,
yeah. No,
yes.
Really, really strong prints. Again, I also want to mention that this exhibit features just about every sort of form of art making, decorative art, film, prints, photograph, painting. That was obviously a deliberative decision by yourself. What led to that?
Well, prints were so prominent at this during the WPA and the New Deal
1930s,
era.
1930s, yeah.
Also, I felt like there was this sort of zeitgeist around this kind of general idea that I was trying to promote and get across. There were some other shows that are happening at the same time that other curators across the country in their own offices 3 and 4 years ago came up with similar ideas. So there were some competing shows that I think complement these ideas. There's a show about American art and the environment that Princeton put together that's coming to Crystal Bridges. There's a show of precisionism, this kind of machine age art that was originated in San Francisco that just closed in Dallas. So there was a little competition for some of these same pieces. But I think this industry link that was inspired by our Standard Oil Company collection was specific to our show. And then we touched some of these things. But the prints and paintings, there were just too many great prints that I couldn't include. And as I said, the Tulsa's Historic Society had some wonderful objects, and I think it's important to show that these new movements in painting that celebrate modernity infiltrated into everyday life and domestic objects, and that even compacts and cigarette cases and barware, cameras, things like that, staplers, were just tried to have this very kind of streamline effect because, again, it's the Depression, and they were trying to spurn consumer sales by having this very elite-looking, sleek, fast, Zeppelin-inspired Jiffy Ware pitchers.
Right.
You know, just that you too in your domestic environment could be very chic and new and efficient. Even your vacuum cleaner could have streamlined design, and you could do all your housework very quickly and be quite elegant. So it was a way to say that it wasn't just in fine art, but that it infiltrated society and even went into domestic objects.
You speak of the stapler. Right nearby the stapler is a really beautiful piece of fun art by Raymond Johnson, what we associate with New Mexico art and everything from abstract. And this is a playfully imaginative, very much sort of that modern, sort of almost a futurist view of a skyline called City Lights.
Right.
Great piece.
So this was a spectacular piece that's actually from a gallery in New York City that I've been aware of for a long time. The pink and purple colors, my whole curatorial team wasn't as excited about this piece as I am. And then when I got it here, the doubter said, you were right. That's a pretty great piece. But it was actually inspired by Johnson, who was from Chicago, but made his career in New Mexico.
It is in summer pastels, isn't it?
Yes. But it's magnificent. And he went to Chicago to the Century of Progress World's Fair, and I think was really inspired by this kind of the idea of tomorrow. And again, Depression era, let's think of a better tomorrow and the future of tomorrow with machines and skyscrapers and lights and entertainment. It's called City Lights, which was also the title of a Charlie Chaplin film from 2 years earlier that was wildly popular. So It might even speak to modern entertainment as well as engineering, electricity, building.
All right. Well, it's a great show. Is there any special programming that'll be around the show?
We have a lot of great films that we're showing throughout the run of the show. And then stay tuned. The exact date is not yet set. I think it's early May. We're going to be doing a humanities panel. And so Professor Sean Latham from TU is going to be sort of the MC for that. And then we have one scholar from UC Santa Barbara coming who has written on speed in the 20th century. And then one of the only three MacArthur Genius Award recipients from Oklahoma. He's an artist and a metal worker and a sculptor, and he's originally from Tulsa but has spent his career in Santa Fe. Tom Joyce, he's going to come back, and we're going to have a general conversation about speed and energy in the 20th century.
So look at the Philbrook website for details on those events as they come up. All right. Making Modern America opens Sunday. Catherine, thanks very much for joining
us. It's always fun.
Catherine Whitney is the Chief Curator and Curator of American Art at the Philbrook Museum of Art and Curator for Making Modern America, a new exhibit which opens Sunday at the museum and runs through May 26th. For more information on the exhibit, visit philbrook.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.